Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
How to even go into this podcast after the things we've seen, Josh Brown?
My Lord, Scott Tilford, I'm still trying to get over Troy Baker with an electric guitar in Joker.
I didn't know I wanted that, but I remember watching a little bit of the footage for it, thinking this is one of the best things he's ever done, and he's done a lot of stuff.
That's the thing about Kojima. He always gives you something you didn't know you needed. I didn't know I needed a little scarf with sentient hands, but then he gave me that last night.
Lighting a cigarette for, you know, why not? They'll sell them at some point. Cy White, also, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to replaying all my Sonic Adventure 2 memories in Sonic Generations.
That's what I should open the podcast on. I called it. I called them putting Shadow in Sonic Generations, although it was hilarious when they showed off what I assume is the new gameplay, because they're remastering Sonic Generations. Right. That general gameplay looks the same.
It's a port. We've bolted some DLC into it. It's basically what it is.
I hate how much it works for me as a Sonic fan, because I was like, oh, you're doing the Sonic X Shadow thing, like the Sonic X Knuckles thing, and I was like, oh, you've got me. I mean, you had me in anyway, but you've definitely got me in.
I'm not a huge Sonic fan, but you were telling me the other day when we did our predictions and leaks. I'm not going to slag it off, Si. I'm going to be very nice.
Go, you go.
I'm going to slag one thing off, and that's that Scott was saying that Generations is based on two different Sonics, which you see in the trailer, you know, the tall one and the stumpy one. I was looking at them
That's
both.
What they call them, yeah.
I was looking at them both thinking, if I didn't know that information, I'd just think there were two Sonics. I couldn't even tell the difference between
them. That's the multiversal reality of our entertainment sphere infiltrating your brain.
That might be it. Yeah. Nah. I was just like, two Sonics, cool.
No, there's a difference in the era. They rebooted him.
Just when you said one was tall, I thought you'd be like, 6 foot, you know?
Like Lanky Mario.
Yeah.
No, it's not what we need. I should say this is the Entitled Banter podcast, the UBP, the UBP, the UBP.
Sorry, I messed it up.
It doesn't matter at all, my friend.
That's all right.
All the mistakes just flow.
Wheeling today.
Yeah, I'll put some sort of echo effect on it. They won't even know. But we take as many people's questions and talking points as possible, whatever's going on in the gaming industry. First question from a New Year's Gunner who says, I'm getting Suicide Squad out of morbid curiosity and having actually enjoyed the beta. My question is, can excellent writing hold up a game when the gameplay loop is bad? Can great gameplay hold up a boring story? I want to initially go to Josh for this because you've been playing the old Suicide Squad.
Yeah, you know, I've been playing through Suicide Squad and admittedly
enduring,
not finished the game, but that is literally the prime example. It's rare that I play a game that has gameplay so bad that it makes me not enjoy the story side of it. I often just kind of like push through, and I've never played one like Suicide Squad that has such a huge divide. Like, the gameplay for me just does nothing, and in fact, it's so flat and lifeless and bad that it makes me think the story is flat and lifeless and bad because they don't inform each other. Yeah. The cutscenes have this kind of like, you know, spectacular mythical superhero nature to them, like most DC stories do. It's a world-ending plot. You've got people killing the Justice League. They're bad. They're powerful. You sort of feel the impact of that. But that's completely nullified for me when you then jump into just an abysmal boss fight with, like, the Flash, where you're doing the exact same moves as you've been doing on the regular enemies for the past 6 hours. Like, they don't inform each other. There's no synergy between them. And games have had similar issues before, but I've never experienced one quite like this. Even the Avengers game, while not having great missions, at least the story missions were more focused than Suicide Squad. There was something to get from it. They informed each other. They took you to new places. And so far in Suicide Squad, I've just not had that experience. So I'd actually say it can, but there's a level of separation that some games have where it can't save a story for me personally.
No, I think it depends how much you're putting up with the gameplay. Like, it's like if you're really aware, especially in games like this where it's like waves of enemies or defend this point or just like survive for a certain amount of time or whatever, where you're just aware that you're wasting your time. Like, you're not getting anything mechanically satisfying out of it, and it does the same thing after, you know, 30 hours as it does after 30 minutes or whatever. So what do you think about like the gameplay versus cutscene stuff?
Yeah, it works one way or not the other, obviously. You know, good gameplay, bad story, you can kind of grit through or skip cutscenes, whatever, but the other way around, it's kind of a problem.
Yeah.
It's just like, we live in an age now where it would just be, you'd save yourself so much money if you just YouTube the cutscenes.
That may or may not be what I've been doing for Suicide Squad.
I'm sure there are plenty of people out there. I've got no dog in this fight. Like, I have no interest. So I'm not necessarily going to bag on Suicide Squad because lots of people have already done it and they're well within their right to. So I don't really have anything to say on that game particularly. It does nothing for me. It's a shame to see so many people burnt by it.
Yeah.
What are your two sort of thresholds for that? Because I can put up, like I was saying, you know, with a lot of jank especially. I don't mind if a game is janky if it's got a compelling story, cast of characters. One of my favorite gaming experiences was going through the Sinking City, which is one of the jankiest, you know, non-enjoyable gameplay systems that I've played in a long, long time, but it was serviceable enough to the point where I was thinking, this is fine, I don't mind engaging in it. It wasn't actively pissing me off in the same way something like Suicide Squad did. So I think my threshold's quite high. I can put up with a lot. It's rare that I've ever had a gameplay set of mechanics or something where I've just gone, that's terrible, you know. I always feel like at least I can manage to find something in there worth clinging onto.
You got through Wanted Dead.
Exactly.
That's a testament to how much that'll work. I will say, I mean, yeah, I think great gameplay can hold up a boring story. One of my favorite games of the year is Prince of Persia Lost Crown, and that game's story is almost non-existent.
Right.
Like, it's in there, but it's just a very sort of like standard stop the evil tyrant story. But it's hilarious because you can explore, obviously, the world in whatever order you want to do. So I found various scenes. It felt like they were massively out of order because then there were revelations where I was like, well, I kind of already know that. And then now we're talking about this, but this other thing's already happened. It was a whole thing that was kind of all over the place. The only reason I didn't give it 5 stars in my Twitter review was because of the way the story barely came together. But that gameplay is immaculate. Like, it's next to Tekken 8 as the best playing game of the year. And I was going to shout out Nintendo stuff quickly as well. Like, no one cares about the story in Mario or Zelda. Like, they've not really evolved in 30 years. I care. They did more of it in Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But like, for Breath of the Wild, it was
some unique stuff in Tears of the Kingdom at the very least, but you're not wrong.
A little bit more lore, like with Zelda's flashbacks and stuff. But like in Breath of the Wild, it was just evil Ganon, go fight him when you're ready. Like, there's not really much else in terms of beat-to-beat storytelling.
I don't want to break your heart, but please, I think in terms of that, if a game has great gameplay but a crap story, does it save it? I definitely agree with Si when he was saying there's way more lenience there, at least for me. There's so many games I've played with kind of crap stories and non-existent stories that I've jumped through. But the only time I've like actively turned my brain away from the story and focused exclusively on gameplay is in the recent Hitman games. I couldn't tell you anything about the story from those games or any of the characters.
There's an Illuminati at some point.
Something. But the gameplay loop is so satisfying that I just jump into those levels and they work without any story attachment for me personally.
I thought you were going to round the bend there and say that that's why you hate Nintendo. Because you're always like, I can't be bothered because there's not much to get a hold of.
That is true. Thematically. You know, like in Zelda, like you were talking about there, I know there's more story in Tears of the Kingdom, but when we did our big spoiler discussion, you were talking about some moments and how much they meant to the franchise overall, and having not followed that franchise, they didn't hit anywhere near as much for me. And in Breath of the Wild especially, I just didn't know what was going on for half of it. And there's the cutscene. I couldn't tell you anything that happened in that story. I know like Ganon was there and there were...
That's pretty much it.
The big... Yeah. I don't even know what you call the big dungeons that were walking around, the champions or
champions,
whatever it was.
Yeah.
Was
that right? I wouldn't have actually remembered that if you hadn't said champions, yeah.
But the actual characters and stuff, I don't mind. Like, the gameplay there was so good.
Yeah, for sure.
It's still one of my games of ever...
Yes.
Even though the story I couldn't tell you a single thing about.
JP says, now that dry January's come to an end, what is your favorite drink, adult or otherwise, to enjoy while gaming? I love a good stout, especially during the winter months. Keep on keeping on. Thoughts on this?
I've seen you drink so much Oasis before we get into the harder drinks over the past 2 days.
That's the secret tonic.
It is. And I'm like, yeah, I can...
Just got a bottle of Oasis right now.
I know, that's what I mean.
It's a weird thing to call out, but yeah, okay, I'll do. Sure. I'm a spirits cow when it comes to adult drinks. Anything really, though, I guess.
You had mocktails last night.
We did have a mocktail last night. Cocktails is the one, but it's just so prohibitively expensive most of the time. So it's spirits for me. My house has always got Di Serrano on tap, basically. Ooh. So, you know.
Are you a spirits and mixer gal or just like
with mixer largely. There's a few that I just like, you know the Fireball whiskey, the like cinnamon favorite?
Yeah.
And Di Serrano, to be fair. Just like, throw it back. I could. I won't. It's not good, but I can.
Mine's always just coffee. I got so into coffee across the pandemic. I was drinking it beforehand anyway, but got super into the different ways that you can brew it and everything. I like a good slow brew. Give me a cafetiere style longer brew with maximum extraction for the coffee nerds out there. And then I bought a milk frother as well. The real milk frother entered the chat and they haven't left. And it's like giving a really good thick brew where it's just nice and steamy and you're just playing through a game across a Sunday morning. That's perfect.
You've mentioned before, was the end of this question, what do you like playing, drinking with video games? Or was that?
The main thing was, yeah, what's your
that makes it sound like I'm a real boozy gamer.
The main thing was, what's your favorite drink, adult or otherwise, to enjoy while gaming? And they said they love a good stout.
Oh, a stout.
During the winter months.
I've just recently gotten into stout during the winter months. You know,
I love stouts.
I know it's maybe sacrilegious. I'm going to Dublin soon, and I'm excited to get Guinness from the source.
It's the best.
Says it's the best.
Go to the Guinness factory or whatever it's called. There's a whole tour you can do. They walk you through. You go walk through a whole hops exhibition. It's brilliant.
I just know you, Scott. You mentioned to me before that you don't often drink while you're gaming. Like drink alcohol because you have a similar thing to me where. Your brain is on a different frequency, and I feel like I'm not taking it in. Totally. I definitely get that with movies. I get it less with games, but with movies, I can't drink with them because I feel like I'm not processing it.
Yeah, I always have that. I've more recently, since my wife got pregnant, I've just kind of given up on drinking anyway, mainly just because both of us were kind of getting out of it anyway. And then obviously when she got pregnant, it was like, well, you can't do it anyway. And I was like, well, solidarity, I'll just join you and I'll give up entirely. Mm-hmm. But I do find that I don't miss it at all. Like I don't know if it's in different countries, obviously people listen from around the world to the pod, but like in the UK, there's a bit of a movement towards really good non-alcoholic stuff at the minute. Like there's a new, there's a Guinness that's just come out that is non-alcoholic. There was Heineken for a while, and it's like the taste is there. The Guinness one's brilliant, like that's bang on exactly what it should be, kind of thing. But yeah, like I have that thing in general where I'm like, if I've had one or two pints or whatever and I'm just aware of it, I'm like, I'm not taking this in fully, even though I am, but I'm aware that I'm not as crystal clear as I could be, and I don't like that feeling. I'm always like, I'm too arsey when it comes to art, and I'm like, I wouldn't walk around an art gallery two pints in, so I don't want to take a game.
I'd walk around an art gallery 10 pints in. I think I used to have this horrible routine when I was in university, and I'd get bladded on nights out. My hangover routine was to get up early and like walk around
the art gallery.
Literally walk around the art gallery.
Ferris Bueller.
Literally, man. Like I was like hungover to hell, head pounding, just stinking up the art gallery while people are trying to have nice Saturdays.
I'm so glad you said that. You brought it back because it also goes to my, oh, I don't really drink with art, and I'm over here being like, yeah, throw it back. And I'm so glad that you've now brought that in.
I'm drunk right now.
Yeah. You sound like I'm a menace.
That's why I'm so animated. Gotta get through the day. No, I'm actually with you. I just drink alcohol generally so much less these days.
Yeah, fair.
When I go out, like I'm either on the 2.5% like Schopenhoffers, which I've really gone into, or I actually just drink a lot of shandies.
Right,
you get watered down with a bit of lemonade. Mm-hmm. Something about the older I get, I'm aware that of how much I'm drinking, and I just can't hack any kind of hangover, even the tiniest amount of hangover. But
It is that. Is it, for me, yeah, some of it was an age thing where I was realizing that I was having like 2-day hangovers, where not necessarily that you feel horrific for 2 days, but you're aware that you're not, it's still in your system. You still have a bit of a stomach ache or whatever it is. And I was like, I'd just rather just not have this.
Not to drop a minute, but I've seen Michael Hamflett, who is in the second half of his 30s, come in with 7-day hangovers. Like, and I don't want to get to the point where I'm getting ruined for the days after that much. No. 2 days is already too much to have to recuperate.
In his defense, I've also seen him at 1 a.m. going into a karaoke bar that he's going to be in there until gone 2, 3, whatever it was. And then
he knows what he's doing.
I've come in early at like 9:15. He's already here. Like,
It's there was one thing last year when I was going to do a podcast with the Dadleys, and because they were going to be filling in for one of the podcasts during the week, and Mr. Michael Sidgwick, not to drop him in as well, was so hanging out of his arse that he couldn't record at all. And man was profusely apologetic. I massively understand. Obviously, we've all been there. But yeah, that was another similar thing.
Hey, you've never partied until you've partied with Michael Hanfler or any of the Daily Boys, I suppose. Go on, just to answer the actual question, though.
Did we even answer that? I said coffee. Yeah, you didn't answer it.
It's soda. I have a soda problem that needs to be addressed. Any fizzy drink is...
I'm a juice fiend at the moment, you know. Ooh. Like, there's nothing tastes better than an OJ at the minute.
Which brand's you favouring? And how natural are you going?
Honestly, any. I don't really mind.
I was thinking if you go like Fanta, but you can go to actual orange juice.
Oh, no. Orange juice. I'm talking like the fruit juice stuff.
Like a hotel breakfast orange juice.
Yeah. I could drink that for days.
The one where you pull down the little tub of it.
It's pure.
I didn't feel like my teeth were going to fall out after too much. I drink pints of them on a night out, put it that way.
Either of you remember when Fanta was a thing? No, sorry, Sunny D was a thing, and that girl drank so much of it that her skin went orange.
I heard that. Is that real? Or was that just a playground thing?
I've never really Googled it, but that was back in like 2002 or whatever it was. But.
I sometimes see myself in these videos, and I look back, and I look at the color of my skin, and I'm like, you're a bit like yellow.
Are you slightly going more orange?
And I'm like, I used to drink Sunny D all the time, and I think
has that slow release.
Yeah, has that altered my skin pigmentation somehow? In a lighter note, though, it's very rare that I drink in the house at all. Never mind, get drunk in the house or anything. Mm-hmm. But sometimes if I do want to unwind, it's either a couple of glasses of red wine with a game. I remember one of my favorite gaming experiences was just getting a bottle of red wine. And playing through Gears of War 5, the first 5 hours on, a Friday night. I've never felt more chill. I've been chasing that high ever since. Fancy a little bottle of 19 crimes or something, you know?
Yeah. There's ways to different game combo. I wouldn't have pegged Gears as a wine combo, but that's,
no, would I?
That's no, potentially very, very good.
Just fact check, by the way. Yes, apparently it did happen. Sunny turned a girl's skin.
Oh, my God. That explains why it went away for so long.
Four-year-old girl drinking 1.5 litres of Sunny D every day. Wow. Probably not a good thing.
Just hooked into a Sunny D machine. Question from Vin Van Meel, who says, seems to me the companies will trial different monetization strategies in the future. After the move from $60 to $70, do you foresee a fair and acceptable model coming into place, or will they continue to compensate with microtransactions? And then I also wanted to throw in Paul McSoul saying, with mass layoffs, increased monetization, the notion that we no longer get the games we pay for and more, has gaming officially gone corporate and lost the rebellious spirit it once embodied when parents and politicians were terrified? I thought I'd roll these together because I thought that in terms of just the attitude of the gaming industry, what it feels like to be part of it and to partake in it. We buy so many different products, and you look at the ways the industry's tried to compensate for the ballooning budgets and the likes of the microtransactions, the on-disc DLC, there's the different monetization ideas that they've had, and nearly all of them have backfired. Like, Battle Passes are still going. They're still hanging in there. NFTs came and went within, 2 weeks. Josh, what do you think of the approach, if the assumption is that we don't go with $70?
Good questions.
Nailed them.
Going to the microtransactions, the $70 thing, I don't think we're in necessarily a good place with them, but
have you bought the Walking Dead ones yet?
Here's the thing, we're in a better place with them. We're no longer getting season pass style stuff. We're getting these battle passes, which, I don't love, but you can't ignore them. And it means when a Rick Grimes skin comes around, I'll drop 16 quid on Call of Duty. It's a sickness. It's my vice. I've given up the drink and now I'm on Call of Duty skin.
That's what you're drinking.
But I think, monetization on that level will never go away. Like, the industry is never going back to just selling you, even if they up the price, single copies of games, because as we've said before, the ceiling on the revenue that you can get tragically from microtransactions is just through the roof. When you get a game that hits, if you have a FIFA, if you have a Call of Duty, you're moving from the millions, even hundreds of millions, into the billion territory. Mm-hmm. Grand Theft Auto 5 would have sold a billion amount of copies would have made $1 billion if it was only a single player game. But that's gone to 10, 20 billion from the microtransactions from the online sphere. So I just think with now there's that amount of money involved, it's to make a strange comparison, it's kind of like where football is, right? Football transfers used to be relatively modest, and now it's 100 million a player, the top players, 200 million euros. It gets to a point where it's just becoming almost untenable, and you can't go back once you've kind of crushed that threshold. You've gone beyond Thunderdome.
Through the looking glass. So what do you think?
I like the phrasing of, what was it, rebellious spirit or what?
Yeah, terrifying parents back when GTA was like headline news.
Sort of the corporate greed of it all. And you said about how it feels to be in the industry or sort of see people in the industry. I feel like we're in such a place of cynicism right now across the board. Obviously, the cynicism of just like, let's take everyone's money with crazy amounts of microtransactions and whatever. But just everyone just seems to be pretty miserable about the state of gaming right now.
Yeah.
You know,
it seems to ebb and flow,
and
but yeah.
Else. It's just a hard time. And
it's a hard industry to love.
Yes. And I don't like to bring this up, but I'd be remiss if not saying Power World, you know, has been kind of a breath of fresh air in the sense of what is potentially doable that navigates that in a different way. Like the numbers of sales that game had in its first week, I don't know what it was, but it was something absurd, wasn't it?
Like 5 million or something. Yeah. It was the first weekend,
Insane.
And 19 million.
And that is microtransaction free, is it?
Yeah.
It's just like, here's a game and it's going to be continually upgraded and it's just a bunch of cool, fun gameplay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-existing stuff maybe, but you don't have to go and play those games that are filled with battle passes and pop-ups and stuff that you might want to navigate.
Also,
it's a
like,
weird time.
Yeah, their community manager, I think it was their community manager, it was the dude over on Twitter, you know, tweeted out that like a general sort of thing about the corporate greed and like here's just a video game and they ended up deleting it. But they in that tweet, it was that they're saying that like, you know, the business types, the jocks or whatever kind of thing, when you're in school, they're the ones who have overtaken gaming, and that's why it feels so horrible. And they ended up deleting it. But it is interesting, or it is you know, worth saying that obviously when a medium or an industry, a business gets so big, you will get the number crunchers increasingly in more powerful positions, and you just look at the amount of layoffs. Like every day, yesterday as we're recording this, Sega of America are laying off 10% of their staff. And it's been every day so far for the last few weeks. Like all of those bigger and increasingly bigger bets haven't paid off. My answer to this question would be that there's a reckoning in regards to budgets and production. I would put a cap on it. It's just a weird thing where it's like at some point you need to rein those numbers in. Like there are too many bodies on the line, and we can actually put a number on the bodies right now. It's over 10,000, and there's already been over 5,000 people let go this month. Well, last month in January. I just think it's ludicrous, and it's like I want more games. It's that literally that stupid Sonic meme in terms of the visual of it, where I want more games for more talented people for less money, and I'm not kidding. Like it's ludicrous.
I'm with you. I think, you know, budgets are of course an issue. They're ballooning to the point where they're just becoming untenable. But for me, I think it's more. It comes back to the publisher expectations, the expectations of the executives. You know, Stephanie Sterling said for years, you know, that publishers don't want to make some money. They want to make all the money. And I think that's more true than ever before. You know, we were talking about Death Stranding recently in the video we did on the State of Play. And you were talking about how that was not up to what Sony would expect from a big, you know, AAA, not first-party game, but exclusive game.
Right.
That thing still sold more than 6 million copies. Like that still made a lot of money. But again, like Stephanie Sterling says, because it didn't make all of the money in the world, that is deemed a disappointment. So I would love to go back to the days that you're talking about. Smaller budgets, more games, more diverse genres. I just don't think that's what these studios and these executives are in it for.
Oh, anymore. It's definitely not what they're in it for.
No, man. You like look at David Zaslav and WB and his, you know, boardroom members are looking at gaming as this booming industry. As it is, it's grown exponentially in terms of revenue and profit over the past 10 years at least. And they're looking at it going, that's the next thing we can squeeze. We're going to, that's the growth industry as they describe it. So I think it's going to get annoyingly worse before it gets better, because then we get in these situations where some money isn't enough. And it was just reported the other day that Microsoft, I think their revenue was up 49%. Just as they've laid off 2,000 people, and stuff like that is just, in my eyes, just an absolute piss take.
Because
you're making money, but because it's not enough money, it's the people who are making the games, people who are, you know, putting the product out there, working day to day, who get shafted while people get $200 million golden parachutes to exit the company on the top level. This is why I become cynical about it, because
no,
it needs to be talked about, but it's not not that everything should be fun to talk about, but you know, you talk about like the same things over and over again.
Yeah. And I think you're right, because we're going to be doing this for the rest of this year. Into
I think it's very much indicative. Like,
we've still got shockwaves to come.
Yeah, and it's like, the whole, I think there's obviously, they could do with a reckoning coming in regards to the profit margins, like the amount that you said the CEOs and et cetera take, redistributing that money amongst the company, like the whole thing that happened back in 2012 with Satoru Iwata, like after the Wii U started to fail, and he like took a pay cut and redistributed it amongst the staff. And his whole point was like, you know, people who are stressed out and are worked to the bone don't make good games. I will cut back and do that. Like, Iwata, increasingly seen as like one of the most genuinely cherished individuals in gaming history. Yep. Like, got hands on with the code to get some games over the finish line. Just an incredible dude. And it's like that mentality. You're never going to get that to be the norm, but like, it's something more approximating that will be a lot better than everything that happened with Bobby Kotick.
I'll tell you what worries me as well. You were talking, rightly so, about budgets. Mm. And I, obviously, they're going to increase anyway as we strive for more fidelity, bigger games, you know, 100-hour experiences that are of Elden Ring quality in terms of variety. But I also worry about the move to licensed franchises. You know, again, WB talking about how they're going to have a slate of DC games and Game of Thrones games. And it's fine for them because that's in-house. But most of the rest of the industry works on licensing agreements. And you look at something like Sony or EA with Star Wars, you know, that license costs so much money that then the revenue expectations are even higher than they already are. Yeah. So the ceiling of those margins of profit, those margins of what is deemed successful, just go higher and higher and higher as other companies take their cut, like EA sacking off the FIFA branding because it was costing them $1 billion. You know what I mean? Like that's an exception now because that's kind of more becoming the rule as these studios want safer bets, but are then going to these franchises, which actually kind of affect their bottom line because then they need to sell more and they need to get more return on their investment, and that's more difficult. It's easy to be cynical about.
But the thing is, that's such a fascinating. We'll like do more because this is such a bigger conversation that we'll revisit across who knows how long. But that's such a fascinating thing. EA is the example because that was the people on the FIFA side saying you need to give us an increasingly ludicrous amount of money to let you call the game FIFA, and at some point EA had to say that's too much. We're just going to call it something else. And it came out as FC 24, and then that sold really, really well. It's like it's in the top games of last year. And it's like, is that a potential viable business strategy, for example, Sony Insomniac, to later down the line do their own thing, use all the tech, use everything, and just it might as well be called Swing Man, and it's from the makers of Spider-Man. Like, they get to, you know, right now EA can say the people who brought you FIFA are bringing you this new thing, and then they take more home because they're not paying the license fee. Like, maybe that's eventually how it goes.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
I think the thing with FIFA is, and we reported on this when it first broke that they were getting rid of that license, is you just know that that money that they're saving in not paying FIFA, that's not going to go into the game.
No, it's the same as it's ever been.
You know what I mean? Like it's not going to make the game better. No. I can't imagine it's going directly to salaries. Could be wrong. I just can't see the people up front striking that $1 billion off and going, you know what? We'll redistribute this.
we'll send it straight
down the pipe. No, that's going straight in the back pocket. It's going in the vault. And that's my cynical take on that, because, yeah, they might be able to break away from those franchises. Mm-hmm. And some studios absolutely will get back to making new IP. But I was just thinking the other day with that WB stuff, you know, gaming has always been such a bastion for original ideas. Like, people are ravenous for new IP in this fandom or audience, whatever you would call it. And the reason Sony was a huge success across the PS4 generation wasn't because it was relying on legacy franchises like Killzone or Infamous or whatever. It was because they brought in new things like Horizon and they reinvented old things like God of War. And I just don't want gaming to get away from that, because that's what, unlike movies, which are definitely going down the franchise route, that's what makes this so special. It's what people want, and it would be a shame to get away from that.
That's also what was so sad about the idea that Insomniac's just tied to X-Men Fantastic Four and Spidey going forward. It's like they are the Marvel license house for the foreseeable future. Question from Zach, who says, have you all ever considered doing more long-form video essay-style videos, either on the channel or independently? I'm sure it's not a simple undertaking, but I would definitely tune in for those, and I'm sure others would as well. Si, you've got something in the works.
Yes. It's funny that you mentioned that.
Little bun in the oven.
Yeah, it has been my baby. First episode of a new series that I've been working on drops Saturday. Yeah. I don't have got the time yet.
So let's go 2 p.m. UK time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Alternatively, just refresh our page over and over again all weekend.
It'll be this weekend, yeah.
But yes, is the short answer, I think.
Yeah. So Sai's doing, we're doing a whole series on the worst thing, and then
we're gonna reveal the
Just do a teaser a little bit.
Little soft launch.
The worst thing X ever did. X not being the Twitter platform, X being whatever we want to talk about.
Great episode.
Maybe long enough timeline, we'll do an X episode. But tune in to see what the first episode is, and we'll do many of them going forward. I think we include this question in general because YouTube is definitely pushing towards longer stuff.
Yeah.
So the pivot for us has been like, how do we do longer form things in general? And you know, like making that work for the channel and whatever. But like, yeah, I feel like we've always been, whatever's a cool idea to talk about, let's make that work for whatever the YouTube algorithm is at the time. And at the minute they're pushing longer stuff. So we do have various episode ideas in progress.
I was going to say, it's a good time for us, like just where we are as a company, and also that YouTube's kind of pivoted to that because it gives us an opportunity to try new things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think hopefully throughout some of this year, there's going to be a lot of like us just like, hey, we're going to try this, see how we react to
totally.
It, and see how like we feel about it. And
things like the longer form discussions, like they were nearly always held back for podcasts, but there's bits of them that we've been filming them more and then putting them out. They've done really well across January. Stuff like that is just indicative of where YouTube is at, but we've always had plenty to say. Mm-hmm. So it's an excuse for that. But JB?
Yeah, I love long form, man. Like the things that I watch on YouTube are all like, those long form video essays that were mentioned there, and I'd love to do some myself. I think I was laughing at a tweet that I got when we did the UBP a few weeks ago, and someone was saying, like, why are Josh's episodes so much longer than Jules's? And that's because I'm an absolute fiend. Scott's the busiest man in the world.
Nah.
And I'm like, do you want to do over an hour every week? Because I would do three if I was left to my own devices at the time. I love the long form stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like what I'm doing, like I don't have anything on the plans right now, but I do want to do some personal stuff at some point. Not like launching a channel or launching a competitor or anything like that. Just for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to do more personal video essays that are more about me because I'm a narcissist than about the games themselves. In like that personal relationship probably wouldn't necessarily, the way I was going to envision it, work on the What Culture Gaming channel because it is so, it will be so much more personal. And
just you chiming in Wanted Dead for 3 hours.
Probably, yeah. Talking about how Wanted Dead is actually a metaphor for my own grief or something like that. But I kind of want to do that with more than just games as well. I want to do films and television, you know, to kind of branch out. And again, like not to gain an audience, not for views, just is a nice creative thing to do on top of what we already do. But we do so much that it's hard to fit that stuff in.
It is. I think like being anyone who's like sort of fundamentally creatively minded has all these things to say, all this expression to get out there. And then it's like you have like this full-time job that you do it for like at least 8 hours a day. And you try and go, you have first aid spray as well. Like, I don't know how you do that as well. Yeah.
We have like 5 concurrent shows. I don't know how we do it.
I think when you get in a rhythm for it, you can keep it up. And it's
that's
like,
exactly it. Yeah. Like once you're in the rhythm, you know you have to keep in the rhythm or it all falls apart.
Totally.
So
it's worth saying though, Josh, you were saying you don't have many things in the oven. Me and you have that longer improvised list coming out and you have a Call of Duty ranking coming out.
That's true.
There are some longer JB things out there.
That is true. In terms of like long form stuff generally, there's definitely some stuff coming. Like our improvised lists have been a laugh to do. I'm currently still... To the annoyance of Scott, I think, because I keep, you're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm writing this Call of Duty article still. Been writing it for like on and off for 3 weeks, but it's only a 20-point list, but it's going to be like 40 minutes.
It is.
It's like a big awesome. One.
You were so, like, is 4,000 words okay? I was more than okay.
I think I'm up to like 5,500 now. With
YouTube
a couple
2024,
more to do.
Baby.
So it's going to be big. Hopefully it's good enough for people to stay throughout the whole thing. But when it goes back to like the video essays and stuff, kind of the what was the word? Kind of the drive to do that as well is I'm crap at collaborating. Like, this is the most collaborative. I've had to be collaborative at this job, right?
Right.
I had to learn how to do it. When I was in university, in the media production module that I was doing, I remember like the first year, and we had to make like a mini documentary series. Mm. And I did everything to the chagrin of the people I was supposed to be doing it with. I'm directing. I'm writing the script. It's going to be based on the thing that I want to do. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'll also hold the camera. I'll also edit it. I made up an excuse that I couldn't get on the university's editing software.
Right.
So I'm going to have to do it on Sony Vegas at home. You know, I'm going to have to just do that. And I did it all and I was a nightmare. Looking back, I was a nightmare. But
you got the turn is this only way to know that it gets done right. It's the Dave Grohl thing. And it takes time in retrospect or whatever to be like, oh, I could have let some of that go. But it's hard.
And I have definitely let a lot of that go now, especially when you like you do a voiceover, you send it off, and then it goes to the great editors. And you know, we obviously have incredible editors here. Like, I'm sat next to one right now who have made stuff way better than I ever would have. Mm-hmm. But I kind of missed that full control.
I know exactly what you mean because I did some recently. We're getting really like in the weeds now, aren't we? I love it. I usually edit my own stuff, and I like that element of control. But there were a couple that I did for the wrestling channel, and I don't edit stuff on the wrestling channel. I've never done it before, so it would be a new experience, and I didn't have the time to do it. So sending that off to someone else was mortifying. It's like, great, someone else gets to see just me getting continually frustrated with the fact that I can't speak the English language.
I remember,
despite the fact that I am paid to speak the English language.
When we first started doing voiceovers, when we first adapted the articles and steered into video and everything, and recording that stuff, the amount I used to try and do a bulk record across a Saturday and try and do 4 or 5 of them in a row, and just the anger, the absolute frustration of just losing my mind on those recordings.
Yeah,
I just could not say the sentences or whatever, and that was such a process. And then and knowing that I'm not even gonna. Like, and then cutting it down before I send it, I was like, can't send them this. And then send it off and be like, well, I hope that works. And then obviously it has done, but you just have to go for it at some point.
Yeah, like, when you get, like, obviously you get great videos out of it. I've had so many videos that I've envisioned, and then someone like, you know, like I work very closely with Dan Dirk at the moment, used to work very closely with Osley when he was here. And
shut up.
All of our editors, to be honest, could come in and do like these fantastic jobs, take something that you've scripted and just make it 10 times better than it was. Mm. But selfishly, I kind of miss editing.
I know what you mean.
Because when I first started this job, I'd actually done more editing than I had writing just through university, video editing, that is. But I never mentioned it because I just kind of thought, I'm not getting saddled with another role. I'm not getting stretched. Not that I was getting like totally stretched.
It's so funny,
but you know what I mean?
Literally the same.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I started here. I started editing like a year into the role because it was desperate need for us. I guess I could do it. And now I just do it.
Because me and you were talking about it and you were like, oh, I can edit this stuff. And it was like, well, do you want to do more of it like a week or whatever? But it's hard to not end up taking everything on.
Yeah. Now I write just like infinitely less. Just, yeah. But that's where it goes. It's fine, you know.
I think it's always going to fluctuate. But I think in terms of like, yeah, the adaptation or adapting to longer stuff on YouTube, like we've kind of tried to steer into that. And then it's like the bedrock of lists is still there, but you'll find that a lot of them are a bit longer. It's just because that's what YouTube's looking for. Like there are just, the reality of it is that they're not necessarily promoting channels that aren't doing longer stuff. And so the more we've done that, the more we've seen a response. So the more we're going to keep doing
it. I think that's really been... We're really into the behind-the-scenes stuff right now.
I love it. It's the best.
I think that's really been received well by the whole team. And it's another great implementation by this great manager, Scott Taylor. Because previously, in years gone by, there was often a strive for making it as short as possible. You know, like, just get it out. Like,
it was the style at the time.
It, of course, was. You know, and I personally, don't know how other people felt, found that somewhat... creatively
stifling
in a way, just because you were working within a strict time limit of, you know, make sure this doesn't go on too long. But now to have that freedom of, to even just go, oh, this entry in this list doesn't have to be 1 minute. It can go 2 minutes. I've got more to say about it. Like, that's just, as someone, you know, doing this day in, day out, just, I mean, I'm waffling on right now. Imagine how much I waffle on when I write, you know what I mean? But it's it makes it a bit more satisfying. It feels like you actually... getting out what you want to say and not compromising it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Like, I think the way that YouTube was used to box that stuff in, but like, yeah, we've had changes of the way the team's been structured over the last few years, like the way that it is at the minute and the way that YouTube is, like, absolutely champions. Like, if you have an idea, you want to talk about something, like you did a whole thing on Wanted Dead last year.
Yeah.
Like, we've done a few videos like that. Like, it's just making it work, and then just trying to, YouTube never share the exact specifics of how to get something working on YouTube. Otherwise, everybody would just make the perfect video over and over again. So that's the reality of dealing with YouTube, but the way that it is right now, it does benefit the longer stuff, the more in-depth stuff, you know, sitting down hoping someone sits down and watches a whole video, etc. So we're just trying to do as much of that as we can.
I just wanted to shout out as well, I know I could shout out literally every editor I've ever worked with here, but I want to shout out Amy as well. I used to work so closely with her, and no one's made me look better than Amy did.
That's very true. Yeah, her little cutaways and everything that would like enhance even news video were awesome. But next question from L4 Oliver, who says, what do you do to relax besides gaming? I can't help but think gaming is to some extent bad for me when it takes 90% of my free time up, which may be entirely my fault, but it just somehow always hits the spot. Any relaxing recommendations?
Come on, Si, knock him back to Disaronno.
Yeah, that's it, lying down prone.
Super quick, we were talking about this yesterday because it's come up before on a previous UBP or a previous wind-up or something about how I always have a second screen on. And I don't always have it on, but it depends what game I'm playing. If I'm playing Prince of Persia like I was last night, which I've now finished, the game's incredible, I had a little laptop on because then I can put a little video on and put something else on.
I'm so the complete reverse of that. That's only acceptable to me if you're like power leveling or in a game or like doing something of that level where you don't really have to take it all in properly. Mm. Like I have friends that are like, oh, you know, I'll put my own music on when I play a game. And it's like,
oh, really?
It's not right, man. I guess you actually take the full experience in.
Yeah, that's true. And if it's like a notable composer,
obviously it depends on what it is.
Yeah, my thing is I would never start a game in that setup. I always start properly the way you're supposed to, and then maybe I hang for the whole thing if the whole package is there. But if it is something that's more grindy or multiplayer or whatever, then I'm chucking that's Spotify kind of, on. And, you know.
Sure, that's fine. If you're playing online or whatever, obviously it doesn't matter. But
yeah,
you know what? I don't like it. But I respect your approach of this thing has to earn my time. I do kind of have a respect for that. Yeah, I'm going to give you a chance, and if you don't grab me, I'm putting on a podcast.
I don't know if we've ever talked, and this isn't even the question, because the question was, what do you do other than gaming to relax? But I don't know if I've ever shared this, but I have a 20-minute rule for TV and movies, and it doesn't necessarily go with gaming, but I'll give any movie 20 minutes. Because that's
TV, that's insane, by the way. I get it for movies.
What do you mean?
Because TV is like... Yeah. You get seasons and seasons.
Yeah,
like,
but well, it's more of a movie thing.
Oh,
it's just it's a passive entertainment thing. I don't like passive media anywhere near as much as I like active media. I want to be doing something. And so like I'll give any movie 20 minutes. And it's like, if you haven't hooked me, you haven't introduced, maybe the cinematography's awesome. Give me some reason to stick around. If you haven't shown that at all in 20 minutes, I'm off. But I'll stick around for something if you do something in the first 20 minutes. I just wanted to throw that out there because that's a rule I live by for the most part.
Just going back to a part of the question there about like gaming 90% of the time, because that's the thing of scratches the itch, and maybe if that's good for you. Scott and I had a conversation on the UBP. I think
conversation
UBP.
I'm doing with the air quotes there.
This was an actual.
I'm preempting now. I know what you're going to say.
This was an actual really nice conversation we had where we were talking about video games and mental health, essentially. And I was talking about how, similar to maybe this person who sent in the question, like video games are sometimes the only thing that scratch the itch. that, especially like last year when I was off work and stuff, it was the only thing media-wise that would distract my brain enough to not think about problems or issues or wonder. And I found that I was actually using it so much that I became so aware of how I was kind of using it as a vice, and I was using it more than I should have because I was putting off other responsibilities because it was just my escape, and it was just like me getting away from it. I don't know if you had that same relationship with it at all, but I think that's something that's it's popped up a few times in questions and comments and stuff, and I think it is it's a real thing to get your head around.
Maybe. My answer, unfortunately, is probably not a healthy one in that I would bury myself in work.
Right, okay.
It's probably, that is the handy thing of first days, bro. There's always stuff to do. I try and make it healthy, like, you know, piecemeal it out, but it's a good distraction because it gets other parts of my brain's work. And then
you're really good at, like, knowing, and this is such a simple thing, but, like, knowing to, like, stop and take lunch or something. Like, as simple as that is. Like, genuinely, you're really good at that, whereas I'll just do it. I'll have lunch after I've done this. Yeah, three more things and
3
whatever.
3 p.m. lunch cocktail for dinner.
Every day, whereas like 12, you're like, I'm getting food. I'm like, cool. Like, but I think there's something about lining up a series of systems or box ticks and then knowing what you need to do to fulfill them.
Absolutely. You know, that's quite relaxing. It's probably more of a thing than I realize it is with me and schedules. It probably is a mental health thing as well.
It can be positive though. Like, absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
But that whole thing about relaxing outside of gaming, my other two things is just, it's mainly guitar. Like, if I'm, because I like getting hands on with stuff, I like cooking and stuff, but I love guitar. I love drawing. Like, it's just any other creative outlet. I want to produce something. I want to interact with something. And so it's always that. It's hardly, and I watch a lot of TV, but it has to be certain types of TV where I'm going to devote the whole season kind of thing. But if it's the main thing I'm doing that isn't gaming, it's guitar. I'm just sat with a guitar, learning songs, learning riffs, or just improvising or whatever it is. I just love producing music.
I love that for you. I love that you.
I'm going to play to my child until he gets sick of it.
Yeah, you learn them, man. You learn them.
I hope so.
No, I think you mentioned guitar before, and I wish I had something like that active, like a hobby like that, that I could engage with, because I'm kind of the opposite. And I think, Si, you may be similar to me on this, where I'm a nothingsman to describe it. I want to be, if I'm relaxing, I want to be shutting my brain off as much as possible. And that was hard last year, but this year I've really enjoyed, like, we'll put a record on and then I'll just lie on the couch and the record will play and I'll have a nice relaxing time. And reading has really been the one for me this year where it's just, I'm there, I'm not looking at a screen, got the ambient lights on, you know, maybe a drink of wine.
Oh, getting rid of a screen altogether is such a shower.
That's it. Like same with music, like it won't be on Spotify, it'll be on the record player, you know, not all the time, but just getting away from like that kind of screen, getting the stimulants and stimulation of the modern world away. God, I sound awful.
But just getting in that
headspace, you know?
Yeah, I'm trying to make more time for that kind of thing away from screens because, you'll work how many hours in a day? And I feel like I keep plugging it, but like afterwards I'll be like, I've got this First Aid Spray thing to edit. So I go out of from one edit, a War Culture edit, into a First Aid Spray edit. It's just like, it can be exhausting to stare at a screen all day. So to have something like that, I do need to get back into reading. For me, I got into miniature painting, weirdly.
Nice.
In sort of, I guess, the pandemic, I think it was. I'm not into, like, everyone always goes, oh, like Warhammer. So I've got nothing. Sorry, Jules is starting to talk about Warhammer. I'm like, I get it. And then he starts talking about numbers and I'm like, I'm out. I'm sorry.
Right.
I don't understand any of the gaming part of it. For me, it's just, I like the miniatures. Mm-hmm, like, lots of board games with miniatures. I got into that. I'm not very good at it, but it's a nice, quiet hobby. Like, just no screens on or, a bit of music in the background or something. The hours just fly by.
Totally.
Because you just concentrated on some tiny thing in front of you, the time just goes. It's very like, I don't do it very often, but there are days where it just hits right, you know, and this is the right time.
I think, there is the less screens thing is definitely a big part of it, because chances are what's coming through the screen is coded in a way that's going to keep you there. And it's like there is something about disconnecting from that altogether. Like, when I'm saying I'm playing guitar, that's without anything, like, unless I'm got some sort of, like some guitar tabs up, I'm learning something. But just being able to sit is an overlooked good thing.
Sitting's good.
Even though I want to use my hands while I'm sitting, I want to like play the guitar or something.
I never
still
spend as much time in bed as I want. And I mean that in like the most non-sexual way ever.
I'm in bed with a switch, mate. That's what you want to do.
All the way through uni and all the way like from home, I spend so much time in the bedroom, like just being in bed, watching telly, playing games, and I never do that anymore for whatever reason.
I remember
because I've got kids living next door to me were screaming the bedroom down every day. That might have something to do with it, perhaps.
I remember when me and my wife moved into our house, and I was like, should we put the bed in like the living room? Because then it's like a big bedroom. And she was like, are you insane? I was like, no, it might be the bed. No one ever does it. Maybe it's brilliant. But she sadly wouldn't move on that.
I'll tell you, if you permit me one more thing. I've got, I think when you talk on their side about having like something that sometimes hits big. Mm. For me, that's been the gym recently, because I've been going not to, you know, I feel like I've got a non-toxic relationship with it, where I'm not there to like, I'm not stressing about like losing weight. I'm not stressing about putting weight on or like gaining muscle or anything like that. I'm just trying to be more active, especially after two years in the pandemic. You know what I mean? Like not going out the house at all, literally feeling my bones and my body seizing up. I'm not as young as I used to be. I don't want to be having 10-day hangovers or anything like that.
I love that he's the better part of a decade younger than us, but he's worried about seizing up.
I feel much older. I feel physically much older. But with that, I think sometimes I go and it's the best thing ever. I feel like I'm getting control of my life. I feel like I'm getting active. I feel good afterwards. But then, similar to maybe games or some other things, I'll get into a period where I just think, if I'm not making progress in something, that's when the toxic element comes in. Like over Christmas, I was ill twice. I went home for Christmas and then a week back here and I just didn't go to the gym at all. And when I returned, you know, I was noticing I was having to lower the weights that I was using and I didn't have the same stamina. And that really bummed me out. Like that lack of progress. And it will come back. It's just that mental hurdle of, why am I doing this? Is it to relax or is it a kind of toxic, I need this, I need to be progressing, I need to be doing something? Mm. And I get that with games sometimes. It's like, why am I doing this? Is it to enjoy it or is it to block out the world? You know what I mean? And trying to figure out that difference, I think, can be difficult, but it's satisfying when you can do it.
Yeah, it's a really potentially weird one, but like on that note, like I've been playing a lot of Clone Hero again recently, which is the Guitar Hero like community driven thing, and there are days where it's like I realize I'm just playing it for fun because I enjoy playing it, and then there'll be days where I'm trying to like get I'm trying to beat a score or whatever, and I'm like, I'm gonna turn this off now. I just want to play it and enjoy it.
Yeah,
when I get to the point where I'm like playing the same bit over and over and over and over and over again,
yeah,
I'm like, no, it's time to go away and do something else.
Yeah. In the pandemic, talked about this before, but like Warzone was the thing that was like there for my social life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I hadn't played games online much at all across the past couple of years before then, but Warzone, everyone was locked down, you know, getting everyone on talking and that.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So great. But then it did get to the point after about a year of playing it every single night for 4 hours where we were just fizzing at each other. We were just like smacking at each other because someone wasn't, you know, making the play that we wanted to do. We weren't going to this area. We were choosing the wrong guns in that. It got to the point of, oh, we might be doing this for the wrong reasons now. Like, this shouldn't be this stressful. Well, that's we should be taking it this seriously.
In that context, it's like that was then your purpose for that day or something. And literally, it's like, for everybody, it's like, if that doesn't go right, then it's like, you messed up the whole life for like that day or whatever.
I remember once it was my birthday, maybe the year after we first went into lockdown, and we were back in again, I think. It was when we thought we were getting out, then we were back in. COVID was on the rise again. And I was like, come on, boys, we'll go back on Warzone for my birthday.
Right.
And I was like, that's my birthday treat. And they were busy or something. And I thought, well, that's my birthday ruined. I go on Warzone with the boys. And it was just getting that in that headspace again of what's going on with this relationship I have with this game.
Yeah.
I think especially for something like, you know, like playing games for a living, like we all channel playing games. When we're living outside of work, we're still playing games. And then the Venn diagram is that the game part goes into the work part. So it's like you're encouraged to do as much of it as you can, and you'll turn all of it into videos and scripts and whatever, which is I'm very aware of that. I remember when I got the job, it was more than 10 years ago, thinking the day before I was about to start, like, I'm about to start monetizing the thing that I love.
Yeah.
And I'm very aware of that, and I've always have been. But it's like, I mean, it's a conscious choice. And I'm gonna, every single bit of this thing that I used to do it whenever I want, there's a need to keep up with stuff. I'm fine with that, but like that is a reality to it, and you can get lost in it for better or worse.
I've got friends posting on Twitter, I beat 5 games in January. It's like, I've touched maybe one. I do it for a living, you know.
That's me tweeting that. I've beat all 5. Our world's all over the place. Can't get enough.
No, I think you mentioned this before, Scott, but I really like your assessment of yourself, I suppose I could say, when you talk about like how games, I don't know how it is now, but used to be, at least when you started like this job and stuff, like that was almost like your purpose, like the release schedule would like dictate like.
Oh, my mood used to swing if there was nothing to play. Like, totally. Not in like an aggressive way, but I was always just like, what am I even doing with my life?
Yeah, like
I have nothing to talk about. Like, yeah.
It's interesting how like these hobbies and these whatever, you know, interests like slowly become part of your personality and part of your drive, part of your purpose. You know, I guess that's just life and that's art and whatever, but I find it fascinating. I do.
Oh, it's a huge conversation. I always find that, like, if, for example, in football, it's like if someone's living for that team, then they get to see them play live and then they lose and then they get very angry about it. And it's like, because your potential reason for living that week just went sideways.
The other day, I was spending all day waiting for a festival lineup to drop and I realized I was doing the same thing of like, that was my thing for the day. And when it dropped and it was all right, and then I had the rest of the day to go. I was just thinking like, well, what do I do now? What's the thing? What's the purpose? Strange.
Anyway, I have no way to segue into the outro for this podcast, but thank you all very much for sending in your various questions. It's been the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UBP, the UBP, the UBP. I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford and Si.
And that's been Si White.
Lovely as always.
As always, a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you all very soon. Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.